Welcome to Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. This podcast is brought to you in conjunction with the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum. In this episode, we pivot to Latin America to understand the vast opportunities that Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Chile, and other nations afford for global brands looking to expand their market presence in this huge but complex online retail ecosystem. Along with Gulf co-founders Kent Allen and Jim Okamura, we talk with Jose Farinas, Latin American President and Global Manager, Wall Clipper Corporation, based in São Paulo, Brazil, and Mariano Mingus, Cross-Border Trade Supervisor at Mercado Libre, based in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Together, we discuss both the opportunities and nuances of the markets they operate in across Latin America, how the COVID-19 crisis has impacted their business and consumers, and get a sense of the changing nature of shoppers and online retail during the COVID era and beyond. All right, let's listen in. Gentlemen, welcome to Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. Thank you for joining us. We're in Latin America today. We've got great guests. Jim, Kent, welcome. I hope you are well. And we've got two amazing guests on this episode, so really looking forward to it. Why don't we just jump right in, and why don't we start by having our guests introduce themselves. Jose, why don't you start us off? Tell us about yourself, where you're based, and the company you work for, and a bit about the company. And then, if you could, give us a sense of where your country is, where you're living today in terms of the COVID crisis. Are you, you know, at what point are you in its kind of evolution as we describe this COVID era?
Okay, so first of all, thank you, Michael. Thank you, Kent and Jim, to have invited me. It's a big pleasure to be again with our with the friends that I have in the Gulf community. So my name is Jose Farinas. I'm the Wall Clipper Latin America president. Wall is an American company, family-owned company, is 100 years old. And I mean, this COVID time, even though it's very sad for a lot of people, when you see just from the business perspective, for Wall, it's been very, very good, mainly in the consumer side. I mean, I have been with the company for five, almost 6 years. I basically live in Brazil. I started here in Brazil as the managing director, and now I was moved to a Latin America position. Our journey in e-commerce in Latin America started in 2015. Basically, we start working with social media. That was the real base for us to open our first e-commerce store in Brazil. Nowadays, we have another store in Argentina, and we are just launching a new one in Colombia. The perspective is to have more four stores up to the end of this year. It would be Ecuador, Peru, Colombia, and Chile. What else? I mean, Brazil basically it's suffering a lot with the COVID. I mean, the number of deaths is growing dramatically here. But even though the market is opening, so Brazil has a situation, I believe, that's similar in our countries in Latin America, is how strong is the country to hold the stores closed? The economical impact is going to be very, very huge. So even though, I mean, the problem is not solved, the companies should open. So this is what we are facing here. Slowly the market is opening, and we are slowly we are seeing more and more stores demanding from us.
You and I were speaking off mic before the beginning of the podcast. We were talking about you've got both the professional and the consumer grade products, and you're seeing this crossover between the two, which is I found really interesting as we all kind of adapt. So talk about that for a bit, that you've got, you know, your two sides of the business, so to speak, but yet they're overlapping. Yeah. It feels like they're overlapping more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, well, as you said, we offer products for the pro business and also for consumer use. So if we are seeing a lot of barbershops close right now, I mean, our demand for pro products are not that big as they used to be. But on the other hand, we are seeing the consumer products exploding. The demand is definitely exploding. People need to cut their hair. There's no way to stop cutting the hair. So people are buying and start using themselves the clippers. Just one data, a very important one. A hair clipper today is a top four product in Walmart. So it's
really?
Yeah, it's wow. Crazy how the demand is for our products today.
Well, retailers around the world, I think, have seen these kind of waves of demand over the past 12, 14 weeks, you know, starting with, of all things, toilet paper. I know in Canada, there's a big run on toilet paper, but then, you know, from espresso machines to hair coloring to bread makers, you know, you've just seen such unusual demand for different products. So thank you for that. Thank you for that introduction. Mariano, give us a sense of yourself and your journey and what you do and talk about your business and what you do and where you are.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. My name is Mariano Miguez. I work for Mercado Libre, which is, as you may know, the largest e-commerce in Latin America. I'm in charge of the account management team in the cross-border program for Mercado Libre. And really excited to be with you guys. In terms of perspective and following on what Jose was mentioning, I think the impact of COVID was huge in our region. I think our region was not ready from a medical perspective to face such a situation, and the local economies are suffering a lot. But if you relate that with e-commerce, we as a company, we saw a huge spike in new buyers, meaning people are turning a lot faster to buying online, not only, usual stuff, but also basic needs. And that trend started when the crisis began, but we have seen that it's been growing ever since. The business for us, it's really good, even though the overall situation in our countries, it's been really hard.
So you're a great addition to the discussion because you have this overall view of many, many commodities. Tell us about Mercado Libre.
We are a 20-year-old company, and we're present in 19 countries all across the region. I think the beauty of our company is that we not only developed the marketplace platform, but over the years we also allocated a lot of resources in building a really solid ecosystem surrounding the marketplace. So in that sense, we were able to build payment solutions to support the online transactions and offline transactions as well. We built logistics network all across the region where we combine different logistics methods, being dropshipping, local fulfillment, remote shipping for international sellers. So it's a pretty comprehensive logistics network there. And we also build advertising capabilities. We also build credit capabilities to grow the business of our sellers and our buyers. As a company, we've been pioneers in the whole e-commerce business for all Latin America. So that's huge. And on myself, I'm part of the cross-border team. We are in charge of growing the global selling business. So our main goal is onboarding international sellers into our region because we know there's a huge gap in supply for our local buyers. And there's a huge opportunity for international sellers to expand their business into our region.
Hey, thanks, guys. Really appreciate you joining us again, Michael, and thanks to our guest. You know, we've got a survey in the field right now where execs at retail brands are kind of giving us feedback on what they're seeing from a cross-border perspectives. One of the survey's objectives is to better understand whether this significant rise in e-commerce and cross-border, you know, during the whole first couple months of COVID has legs, so to speak. So, you know, are we going to see, as stores reopen, the e-commerce growth decline, or are we going to, you know, kind of maintain this new share as stores reopen and customers slowly go back? Curious if you guys could weigh in on what you see the impact of stores reopening in the different markets that you guys serve and what the impact is on e-commerce here in the, you know, we'll say the mid and the long term.
From my perspective, I believe that there are going to be a dramatic change on people behavior. So a lot of, as Mariano said, they are seeing a lot of new buyers. And I think that the new guys that are coming to the e-commerce world, they're most of them are having a lot of good experiences. So based on that, I believe that e-commerce trend is going to be even bigger than was before the COVID. I believe truly on that.
Yeah, I agree with Jose. And we're also seeing not only a change in behavior on the buyers, but also on the merchants themselves. I mean, lots of local retails are switching their business to online or e-commerce platforms, maybe accompanying the changing behavior of the buyers. They are understanding now, or maybe they were forced by the crisis to accelerate their digital transformation, and then they're seeing the benefits now from a cost perspective, from a convenience perspective to the buyers, from a reach perspective. Obviously, e-commerce platforms have much more traffic than, you know, local stores or physical stores. So I think it's a trend that's here, and it will continue to grow even more in the coming months.
I've got a question, you know, for Jose. Jose, in the past, you know, we've often talked of the various channels that you support at Wall Clipper, and in particular with the distributor channels. How has the COVID-19 crisis, you know, affected, you know, some of those distributors that you sell to?
Jim, I think that impacted a lot. A lot of these guys depend on the region that they were in Brazil. They need to completely shut down. And for those that had already developed their e-commerce capabilities, they somehow kept the business moving on. But I wouldn't say that this is the majority. The business in this normal channel was definitely very much impacted.
You've been working with some of the distributors to fulfill e-commerce orders. You know, has that partnership, you know, kind of developed further as e-commerce becomes more important for everyone's business?
Yes, I mean, for sure, the guys that have shown to us strong e-commerce capability, I mean, we are putting a lot of attention on them. But as you know, we try to have strong policies in Wall to, as much as we can, to guarantee that to buy a Wall product from one distributor is a good business. We do not really allow up to certain limits that prices fluctuate and things like that. So we try to support the channel as much as we can. And in some situations, when we deal with e-commerce people, these guys do not really respect these policies, which in reality damage the business for everybody. So yes, we are supporting them, but we are trying to put as much roles as we can do.
It's Michael. Let's go one level deeper. Since we have your collective expertise, I'd love to do a kind of a top country by country exploration for a few minutes about how e-commerce is developing in each of these nations. Less about how the COVID crisis is impacting, but more about how you see each of the different markets. So, Mariana, why don't we start with you? I think if you could cover off Argentina, Mexico, a touch on Brazil, because I think there's an overlap, such a big market between the two of you. But if you could speak to Argentina, Mexico, and your impression of business in Brazil.
You know, Mercado Libre is an Argentinian company, so our headquarters are based here. And I would say that e-commerce is huge. And it's grown even more this year, as I said before. But I think people now are getting used to the convenience of buying online much more than before. And they are relying more heavily on e-commerce platforms to get everything they need, from clothing or the typical consumer electronics product categories to fresh foods or basic needs. And I mean, much more than before. The e-commerce landscape in Argentina, it's pretty developed, but it's getting better and better every year. That's also related to heavy investments in the logistics networks that I was mentioning before. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, they improve the buyer experience. So, you know, Argentinian buyers are getting used to getting their products next day delivery. With next day delivery, so that's huge.
Would you say that's in the percentage of population? Would that be greater than 70% can get same or next day? Like, give us a sense of how available that is.
I would say 60%. Okay. And that's because most of the urban population in Argentina, it's based in Buenos Aires or the surrounding. But all big cities, at the most, they can get their deliveries in 72 hours, which is really good. We, as a company, we are allocating a lot of resources in improving the logistic network. That really makes a difference in the buyer experience.
No question. All right, take us to Mexico.
Sure.
What's your perspective of the Mexican market?
And in terms of Mexico, I would say it's the same, with the addition that we have other big players as well, that, you know, the competition there is much stronger, and that obviously results in a much better service for buyers. So that's a good thing at the end of the day. There's a lot of companies doing local fulfillment. That's our regular stuff. And buyers are really used to getting their products probably same day. Mm. So yeah, I would say the picture is really similar with the addition of greater competition in Mexico.
So that density of some of those cities in Mexico really pays off in terms of being able to service them well, because it's just the population is so dense, you can, the economics work, right? So you can do many deliveries in one route because of the density, right?
Right, and we reached the minimum threshold in volumes that allows us to, you know, to offer these economies of scale. The buyers see the benefit.
All right, so touch on Brazil for us. We're gonna pop back over to Jose to also talk about Brazil from his perspective, because he's living there. But from your perspective, big market for you. How do you see Brazil in this context?
Yeah, Brazil is our biggest market as a company. It's a huge country, so the market is enormous. And I would say that the picture there is really similar to Mexico, where you have really strong competition. Maybe the presence there, it's stronger for local retails, that they've developed really strong platforms on their own and not only international players such as in Mexico, but in terms of customers, customer trends and customer experience, I would say it's the same. There's a lot of local fulfillment centers being developed, and the population in the main cities are served within 24, 48 hours at the most. So I think the picture is really similar in the three main countries of the region.
Jose, over to you. Let's start with Brazil. Do you have anything to add from your context of being a citizen there and living there, and from your perspective about what you've seen in e-commerce and international e-commerce in your country?
Yeah, I mean, as Mariano said, e-commerce in Brazil, it's very, very big. Even when you compare with global numbers, Brazil is in a very high position within the countries. I would say that, as he said as well, we have local companies, local retailers, such as Lojas Americanas, Magazine Luiza. All these guys are using a lot their stall and base. This company has more than 1,000 stores, so they are taking a good advantage of this, so allowing people to buy online and collect in their store, so they can provide this type of flexibility that it's really interesting. When I look at e-commerce from a different perspective as a brand, I can give another a different view. That is, marketplace in Brazil is still not that controlled. So, and we are in a region that has a lot of taxation. So when you have taxation, a difference from those that pay no tax to those that pay tax, it can make a lot of difference in a price-sensitive market. So I think that from this perspective, e-commerce in Brazil has a lot to develop still. We need to have better law to protect the brands and et cetera. Go ahead. Sorry, Michael.
Yeah, let me ask you about that taxation piece. So is it the case that consumers in different parts of Brazil are taxed differently? Is that what you're saying?
This is one part of the story. The other one is we have, for instance, a lot of a huge difference between Paraguay taxation and Brazil and Argentina. So a lot of products, are moved in the parallel market to Brazil and to Argentina, and people go and sell online. Unfortunately, the platforms, they try a lot, but it's very difficult to control 100% what is being sold in these platforms. So it creates a very unfair competition from some perspective. So I'm giving you an overview from the brand perspective, not from the end user that want to buy cheap, a good product. That's it. When you have a brand, you need to think about different aspects of the business. Okay. So this is something that have damaged a lot all through the time, but we have been working with the platforms and trying to find ways to protect our brand. And in some cases, just one example, 3 or 4 years ago, it was possible to find in one of the marketplaces platform, the same product that I sell half of the price. So it took a lot of work between ourselves and the platforms to find out a way to control this better.
Okay. Okay.
So when
let's
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to make a quick comment about Colombia and Chile. When I compare these markets against Brazil and Argentina, they are far away still. But I mean, there are markets that are developing, and I mean, they are going to be important sooner or later. Today, I would not see the e-commerce in these markets as something very strong.
Which Jose, which markets have you most recently launched in? Are you starting to expand from a market perspective, and which ones are more recent than others?
We have started in Argentina, and we are going to launch our e-commerce in Colombia next month. And the strategy with the in Colombia, as we do not have a legal entity, we don't have local inventory. The strategy here is to use a local distributor to do the fulfillment. We are going to run the store here from Brazil, and we are going to collect orders during the day. Next day in the morning, we send those orders to my local distributors, and he does the fulfillment. This is the strategy. It's very simple, very straightforward, that we're going to apply in all countries in Latin America. Just Brazil and Argentina, as we have legal entities there, we are going to supply out of our inventory. Otherwise, we are going to rely on a local distributor inventory.
Right on. And well, let's transition to talk a little bit about, thanks for that overview, by the way. Let's talk a little bit about the context in the COVID era where, you know, there's this in and out between stores opening and stores closing and the effect that it's had. We've touched on it, but the effect that it's had for your markets in terms of a shift online, we've certainly see a shift of volume. You've already touched, both of you have already touched on a change of volume. But, you know, our stores, do you see stores reopening? And you know, Jose, you mentioned pick up in store, click and collect as an element. And Mariano, I'd love for you to chime in on that as well, if that's a part of a distribution model in general. Mariano, why don't we start with you? Is there, you know, your sense of opening of stores, of this ebbing and flowing of demand and where it's going to settle out at? And what do you think of this integration of retail and stores?
Sure. So that depends on the country. For instance, in Mexico, I think local stores are reopening, and that's a good news for the market overall. But again, we do see a huge trend in retails switching their business online on a much faster pace than before. So I guess that's related to what I mentioned before, that the businesses are seeing the benefits in finally transitioning into an e-commerce retail business model. In terms of the other countries, I can speak from Argentina. Unfortunately, local stores are not being able to reopen yet. The crisis is still here, and there's not much progress on the fight against the virus. So much of the population is still in lockdown, especially the bigger cities. There were some stores reopening, but now they're saying that they will close again. So I guess that, again, they are being forced to finally analyze the online alternative as a solution to be closed for, it's going to be 3 months now. So that's a long time.
Yeah.
Again, as I said, I think the trend is, local businesses are being forced to finally transition at least part of their business into an e-commerce business model.
Jim, you and I have talked about, and in the last podcast and in the webinar, the last webinar, the Maze Path Ahead webinar, we talked about in LATAM, the shoppers traditionally relied on more stores. It sounds like, as I listen to Jose and Mariano, that you've got this great acceleration happening where, you know, trends that kind of were percolating along or have just been forced to change. Is that your, you know, reflect on that research and what you've been listening to. Is that what you're hearing as well, that we've seen this irrevocable move forward from an e-commerce perspective in markets that traditionally were not strong from an e-commerce online perspective?
Yeah, I think what we've been seeing both in mature and I'd say emerging e-commerce markets, that the shift towards digital channels, you know, does seem to be kind of a permanent shift. I mean, as Kent mentioned, we're gathering some data on that now, but certainly anecdotally, what we've been hearing from most people is that they do expect that this shift to e-commerce is a permanent one. I think I'd be curious, you know, to hear, you know, how this is starting to change, you know, some of the thinking and strategies. And Jose, if I may ask, you know, we in the past, you touched upon this earlier, things like pricing strategies and how important price control is, you know, through digital channels. What have you kind of been able to do, you know, from a pricing and promotion standpoint during the crisis to, again, help, you know, raise your sales and revenues? But has that kind of given you new learning opportunities to understand, you know, what it takes to really stimulate demand, you know, with the end customer?
Yes, Jim, as we talked before, we have been taking a very conservative approach in our store. We basically treat it as a convenience store. So, and we charge a premium price on that to avoid competing against our normal channel. During COVID, considering that a lot of stores were closed, I mean, we adjusted our prices down to the street price suggested. Okay. So, and believe it or not, we saw an increase in sales of 5 to 6 times. So, I mean, wow. Definitely we noticed that it's very price sensitive. And I mean, if somebody can buy straight from the brand using the same price that they can buy in other channels, I mean, if you are generating a reasonable amount of traffic, that is our case, as we strongly use social media to do that. So we saw the demand there. I was sure before that part of the reason why our direct-to-customer sales were not that big was our price strategy. But that was okay. I mean, that was the choice that we made. And now that was possible to try the same level of price, we saw the demand exploding. Okay.
So really interesting to hear that. Yeah. And does that make you think, you know, how might that change, you know, some of your strategies moving forward?
Yeah, Jim, I mean, it's difficult to say right now if I will be able to maintain the same street price in my store in the future. It depends a lot how the channel is going to react. Assume the fact that a lot of what we used to know as a channel is going to change. Possibly I can even change my price policy, but it's difficult to say right now what is going to be my next step in terms of price policy. It's very difficult to say. The good thing, Jim, just to go back to a lot of our conversations, the strategy that we took before to create a very solid social media and then generate traffic out of it, I mean, today have definitely proven that was the right decision to take. Today we are capable to generate traffic. And you mentioned promotions. I have done no promotions. I have not spent any money in marketing. Everything or a big portion of our traffic came from social media. Generate a lot of good contact for our customers and the traffic came. Okay. So just this compliment.
It's Michael, it's such a fascinating discussion, this rise of organic social media again, right? It's like back to the future, you know, in the early days of the social media platforms, you could run a community and you could drive interest in community and sales, and then that kind of went away as the platform is monetized. But listening to you, the mix of the change of consumer habits and is kind of given a rise to organic social media potential again. Jim, you and I were talking off mic after our last podcast interview. We interviewed Nathan Isaacson from New Balance, and he had this quote that you loved, which was e-commerce at New Balance, before COVID-19 was a show side or a sideshow, but now digital is the main show. Talk about that. I mean, it'd be interesting to get your thoughts on that, given our conversation with Jose, and maybe Jose, if you could ask Jose, his impression of that in their business. It sounds like it's becoming more and more important.
Yeah, this is what Nathan from New Balance, was saying, that digital is now the main show, is really something that we've been hearing from so many, different executives that we know in the digital retail space. And I think what's been exciting for us is hearing how the cultural change inside of, often big enterprises is also changing along, with that. I think just the internal attitudes towards the digital retail strategies is perhaps getting more attention as it is, a bigger part of the overall revenue story for any company these days. Jose, perhaps, you could comment on, do you see that kind of attitude or cultural change, inside of Wahl as clearly, your e-commerce efforts, across Latin America have become such a bigger part of your overall strategies?
Yes, I mean, Wahl have been working from the last, I would say, 2 years at least, very strongly towards developing a base for its global e-commerce. And nowadays, things are speeding up dramatically. I would say that, the impact that the Second World War had for technology development is about the same as COVID is over e-commerce. Not just the brands, but also little guys that were not worried about e-commerce because they have their store, they have been open the door for 30 years, selling products, paying their bills, etc. They need to change because all of a sudden they need to stay closed for 90 days or even more. So the impact that COVID is going to be over the behavior, and I'm talking about overall, all the ecosystem is going to change. The buyers, logistic companies, platform developers, and brands, and etc. Everybody is going to be absolutely different when all these things go back to what we used to know as normal. So now we can open the stores, but I'm sure that everything is going to be absolutely different from this moment.
Mariano, I wonder if you could pick up on that thread, because you deal with many companies now. On the one hand, you're probably dealing with people in the organization who are oriented towards digital, so it's you're kind of already selling to the converted, so to speak. But are you feeling a different cultural shift as you have discussions about your platform, about selling in the platform, about the role of e-commerce in the many, many companies that you work with across many markets?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I totally agree with the quote you were mentioning a couple of minutes ago. Before, it used to be like a sideshow or a side project for the biggest companies. I'm referring to e-commerce. And now their main strategy is based on e-commerce. So it's definitely a change that we are seeing, and it's gaining pace. And it's going to be accelerated in even more in the next coming weeks and months. I think it's a trend that's here to stay. And it's going to be even bigger in the near future.
So as you and your team sat and thought about developing these markets and your base in 2019, pre-COVID, the time before, as we sometimes call it, and now after the 12 weeks you've just experienced, and now thinking ahead, so now we're all thinking about this COVID era, you know, who knows how long this is going to last. This could be 12, 18, 24, 36 months by the time we're out of it, have a vaccine, whatever return to normal looks like. What changes have you made or are thinking about in your longer term strategy based on what you now know the environment is going to look like versus how you were thinking about it in 2019? I mean, I just was reflecting on you know, the discussions back in Miami that I was listening to and watched. You know, it was a great LATAM day in Miami, and then direct to e-commerce sales were growing, and you know, e-commerce was you know, this was almost pre-COVID. How are you thinking differently in your strategy now that you have a, you know, such a change, and now that you're thinking about the future with what you with what we know today?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the main difference is that all the resources that we needed to allocate for outbound campaigns and in order to drive awareness from local and international merchants into our platform, we can allocate in enhancing and improving even more our logistics network because the interest is already there. I mean, instead of needing to do outbound campaigns, we are having a huge influx of interested merchants that they are coming to us, the requesting an account or requesting, you know, to open their businesses in our platform. So that's a lot of a huge part of our resources that we can better allocate in, you know, improving the convenience of our proposal to our buyers and making, you know, same day deliveries, next day deliveries. I think it's going to be everything related to that, to improving the convenience and shorten the delivery times.
So there's more people knocking on your door than ever before. Right. So a little less business development and a little more resources focused into handling all the people knocking on your door. It creates other challenges and opportunities, right?
Exactly. And just as an example, in the past, if you wanted to develop, for instance, the U.S. market, and we wanted to onboard U.S. sellers into Latin America, it was really resource consuming, and conversion rates were much more slower. Conversations tend to be longer, you know, the process was slower. But now we're seeing the opposite. Now we're seeing U.S. merchants coming directly to us, exploring on a more serious way the chance of expanding their business into our region. And we're seeing not only that the number of interested merchants is growing, but also that the conversion rates are much better. So for every interested merchant, then we are being much more effective in getting them on board our platform and actually selling. So that's really good news.
And what's the timeline from, you know, knocking on your door, interested to being on your platform to actually up and going and active? What is that time cycle look like for your platform? Is it vary by the country that they're looking to get through, or is it kind of a, you know, once you're on the platform you can add markets? Tell us a little bit about that.
That's an excellent question. For the local markets and the local business, it's automatic. We have self-registration, so if you're interested in selling, then you can just create an account and start doing it. For the international business, though, it's an invitation-only platform. And there the cycle depends entirely on the merchant. Mm-hmm. If the merchant is on board and they are totally sold on the idea of doing it, then the cycle can take 1 week and at the most. Otherwise, it can be delayed and they can take 3 weeks, 1 month at the most. But again, it's entirely up to the merchant. We launched a new platform, a revamped platform actually, at the beginning of the year that allowed us to shorten the onboarding process by more than 4 weeks per merchant. So as I said, if a merchant is interested now, it can take only, I would say, 5 business days to have them on board and listing and selling in our global selling platform.
Jose, I want to ask you the same question. Now, I've been listening to your conversation. I know you've done work with Jim around pricing and distribution strategy. So you have a different layer of complexity in terms of how you go to market, channel management, distributors versus retail versus professional versus consumer. But as you thought about your growth strategy or strategy in 2019, how are you thinking differently with your experience in the past 12 weeks and then understanding the, as we, as much as we can understand what the next 18, 24, 36 months look like? How are you, what do you think might be different about your strategy than it was in 2019?
Michael, in reality, we have been putting a lot of attention in Latin America and in e-commerce. So I think that COVID, in fact, is not really going to change our strategy, but it's just going to, let's say, confirm that the direction that we took was the right one. I was always a strong believer on the e-commerce. I always saw it as the future. So for us, it's basically saying, okay, you have been doing right. You took the right decisions. You're putting emphasis on the right stuff. And when this is part of long conversation that I have with Jim, I never disconnect e-commerce with our social media. So as we are going towards different markets now, we are already developing social media channels on those markets. We have today around 12 different social medias in Latin America. We have around, in all Latin America, around 3.5 million people already connected with us through social media.
Wow.
So this is something that we have been developing. We develop social media, then we connect to e-commerce, one as a consequence of the other. And this is something that we have been building this since 2015. So this was our view back there.
It's interesting because as I talk to many retailers who are forward-thinking like yourself, this COVID crisis is acting as a catalyst or an accelerator to already existing plans. So it sounds like you are ready for it now. It's just the scale has just changed, right? Suddenly,
yes,
you know, volumes have jumped up and suddenly there's more people at home. And so it's just kind of probably a bit more thinking about the resources. And Mary, I want to jump back to you for a sec and kind of wrap it up and then I'll leave it to Jim and Kent to kind of take us home. Let's talk about some fun stuff. What, you know, we've talked back and forth a little bit. I've experienced these sudden demands for products that are in categories, if not brands, right? So in Canada, you saw this, you know, from, as I said, from toilet paper initially, hilariously a little bit, like we're all scared that there'd be no toilet paper in a country that's half covered in forests. But anyway, that's a whole different matter. You know, we've seen all kinds of interesting demands. I'm just, you know, is there any product categories that jump out that are kind of, wow, I didn't expect that, or they're coming back like never before? You know, as you parse through all that data, you've got such a great view. Anything surprising you or something you wanted to call out and has really jumped to your mind as in, wow, look at the sales of that. I didn't think that would happen, but now that I think of it, it kind of makes sense. Anything jump to your mind?
Yeah, sure. I think basic needs are experience a huge spike in their demand. I mean, it's not surprising, but it's, even though it's really happening, we saw an interesting increase in the demand of thermometers and oximeters and all these tools to measure health. I think people are turning lots of their attention on, you know, taking care of themselves and right, buying all these kind of products, but also fitness products to exercise at home. We are seeing a huge spike in demand on those products that, to be honest, I didn't know or I didn't expect that happening. Maybe not at the beginning of the crisis, but that's definitely the case, I don't know, 2 months from now.
It's funny you call that one out. Have you heard of this? You know, we say in North America, when our kids go to university, you get the freshman 15, right? You put on 15 pounds because you're yeah, suddenly got the buffets. And I've heard people call it the COVID-19, you know, people snacking more and they're putting on a little more weight. But now, yeah, I, you know, you're funny because you're talking about, okay, a couple of months in, boy, I better start exercising again, because this all sitting around is adding up.
That's definitely the case. I think people are feeling a lot more sedentary than before. So we're seeing a huge demand in fitness products to exercise at home.
Well, it's funny. It's surprising, but not surprising, right? And that's what, I have, right? You said, it's like, hey, it's surprising. But then when you think about it, it's not so surprising. It's so interesting. Any categories you think now that you said, well, there's some gaps in what we offer that any of the listeners could say, hey, I've got a product that I think, is there anything that stands out in your mind that you wish you had more of to offer on the platform?
From the international perspective, I would love to have a lot more from home appliances. Maybe not the extreme high-end products, but the mid-range home appliances, maybe for kitchen or hand tools. We do have a lot of that, but I would love to have more of those. And again, accompanying the trend in demand of fitness products, I would also love to have more of that, more supply of exercising product categories.
Jose, last question to you, and then I'm going to pass it over to Jim and Kent. I imagine that the sudden, as a manufacturer, not just a brand, but the sudden increased demand is very difficult to suddenly accommodate in your environment. Do you see changes in as we move through in sales of accessories, as barbers, professionals start to open up, you'll see that demand kind of catch up and be able to catch up to that demand? Is that a part of the business that's gearing up to get ready for that?
Yes, WOW is working globally in terms of providing some self-protection equipment to the barbers, but we do not have the line ready yet, but it's in the pipeline. A lot of work is being done with our suppliers in China and even in US to set up a line that is going to be complementary to our normally hair clipper line.
Kent, over to you.
Hey guys, Mariana, great to hear that you guys are getting calls and seeing a spike in demand from suppliers of US products that want to reach Latin America consumers. And Jose, guess question for both of you guys. Obviously, we've been spending a lot of time on the China e-commerce report that we released a couple months ago, and probably we've got a workshop and some webinars coming up this summer that dives into that. One thing that we've seen over the years is we've been trying to encourage US-based brands, retailers, direct-to-consumer brands, digital natives, the whole lot. We've been concerned that they've been slow to move into Latin America, and we've told them that, you know, we've seen a lot of product coming in from China directly into the different countries of Latin America. And if they continue to wait and watch, that they may be losing present market share, but also future market share throughout Latin America. Could you guys weigh in on that? Maybe start with you, Mariana, if you could just tell us, you know, what you guys are seeing as far as China-based sellers selling on your platform, reaching Latin American consumers. And, you know, maybe Jose, if you could talk a little bit on whether you guys are seeing, you know, competition coming from China and how that might have been impacted by all the recent dynamics.
We do have a lot of Chinese sellers or China-based sellers is in our platform. I would say most of our international business comes from China-based sellers. I think their mindset is different because they grow their businesses with exports in mind, and they develop their products mainly for international markets. They have a lot of experience in cross-border, as opposed to U.S. merchants that not necessarily have that experience or that mindset. They tend to focus a lot more in the huge U.S. market and tend to, I wouldn't say ignore, but they don't follow closely other markets because, to be fair, Latin America is not a simple region to reach internationally. But with that in mind, it's that we are developing our global selling program. And trying to do it as hurdle-free as possible so that U.S. sellers can expand their business into our region, because we see that the region is far from saturated. I mean, the opportunity is huge. if you have in mind that most of the local businesses are importers. So they do not own their brands. They do not own their pricing. So US merchants with their brands, with their products, they could really take advantage of the local context.
Jose, what are your thoughts on the China question?
Yeah, I think that for WOW as a local, as a global brand that had already established distribution all over, this cross-border e-commerce, it's an issue. And when we go to, when you go, for instance, to Latin America, it goes back to the point that I made at the beginning. I mean, the border control is not there yet. So what happened is that a lot of products come to the market without collecting proper taxes. People take these products and then they go to the platforms and sell. Unfortunately, as I said also, platforms cannot control all of it. So we end up with a very unfair competition. So this is, from the brand perspective, this is a tremendous, tremendous issue. If you go to the Brazilian law, for instance, the law is not clear on how to control who is responsible for. For instance, to sell a hair clipper in Brazil, you need to go through a product certification. If you go to some of the marketplaces platforms, you're going to find a lot of products that are being sold without going through the certification, without collecting taxes. So cross-border e-commerce in Latin America is an issue. I think that a lot of things must happen before we have it in a good way. We see it in a good way, unfortunately.
That's important, what Jose is mentioning. And that really is a concern. Hopefully we in Mercado Libre, we do have a lot of resources allocated to, you know, controlling what's sold on our platform. And we have several programs that allows the brands already selling with us to just select or flag unauthorized sellers, and that they are automatically removed from the platform. So yeah, we take that brand protection program really seriously. It's actually one of the main priorities of our company. And the whole point there is to protect the most important asset of each brand, which is actually the brand. So yeah, I agree with the concern. And hopefully and thankfully, we in Mercado Libre are taking the right steps to protect that.
Well, it's a complex ecosystem, and clearly I think best in class platforms, one of their distinguishing elements is that brand protection. So brands have the confidence in that platform that they can protect the brand and do the right thing. So it's great to hear, you know, as a top tier brand that's a serious focus for you. So I think that is, again, a distinguishing element between marketplace platforms, one versus the other, amongst other things, but that's a pretty important one.
Yeah.
Listen, gentlemen, this has been a great discussion. I learned a lot, and I think the listeners are going to learn a lot. I really wanted to thank you both for taking the time to be on the Global E-Commerce Tech Talks podcast. And, you know, on behalf of Kent and Jim, thanks so much. Any last words, Kent or Jim, as we wrap up?
No, just wanted to thank our guest and thank you again, Michael. And, you know, we'll be updating the Guelph community about Guelph, New York, which is slated for this fall. So stay tuned on some important announcements on that front here over the next week or so.
Final words, just thank you both, you know, Mariano and Jose. Wonderful to have you on. And again, you know, best of luck as we all explore what the future holds for us.
That's a wrap on this edition of Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. Special thanks to Jose and Mariano for being our guests on this episode. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe on Apple iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast platform. Please rate and review, and be sure to recommend to a friend or colleague in the retail and cross-border commerce industry. I'm Michael LeBlanc, founder and president of Emmy LeBlanc Company, Inc. You can learn more about me on www.emmyleblanc.co, and you can learn more about Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum online at www.globalecommerceleadersforum.com. Until next time, have a safe week.